who does not expect to receive anything from God, whether in the flesh or in the spirit? Well, I don't think anybody would say me. If we expect to receive from God, do we expect to give to God? At the end of a job interview, the human resources director asked the MBA graduate, Masters of Business Administration, what salary he expected if they hired him. And this candidate responded confidently, in the neighborhood of $100,000, depending upon the benefits package. So the HR director replied to him, what would you say to a benefits package of 5 paid weeks of vacation, 14 paid holidays, full dental and medical, a retirement fund with a 50% company match, and a company car, say an old 07 red convertible BMW. And the grad sat up with his mouth hanging open and he said, are you kidding? Of course, the HR director said. But you started it. Now my question is, how many people are like that Masters of Business Administration graduate with God? They list all the ways God can bless them, but can they as quickly list all the ways that they can bless God? Are they as willing to give to God as they are to receive from God? Now, instead of saying they and many people, you know, talking about other people, let's talk about us. Let's talk about me. Can we list all the ways we want to give God as quick as we can list all the ways we want Him to bless us? Are we as willing to give to God as we are to receive from God? But how can I give to God? Do you have someone in your family or maybe a friend who has everything? You know, it's like trying to give to someone who has everything and what he doesn't have, he can easily get. How do you get something or give something to a person like that? Well, to that person, we can give ourselves or to a work that He wants us to give to. And in like manner, I can give to the good works that God has the church engaged in. We all receive from God whether we give to Him or not. But we receive even more when we do give to Him. And the area in which we receive more is in the Spirit. He who is converted to Christ begs for opportunities to give. If the church did not pass the plate, let's say on a given Sunday, he would not be relieved. He would be saddened, or probably actually angered. I want to give. Don't you take away my opportunity to give. He knows God. And such a person knows what he wants to do. He has freely received from God and now he wants to give freely to God. Many of the first century churches were just like that. 2 Corinthians chapter 9 shows us the Corinthian church, that the Corinthians had made a promise a year in advance to help their poor brethren in Jerusalem. And then it was time to back up their promise with funds. Therefore, Paul reminded them of their promise and previous willingness. And so he wrote these words in 2 Corinthians 9, verses 1 through 5. Now concerning the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. For I know your willingness, about which I boast of you to the Macedonians, that Achaia was ready a year ago. Corinth was in a region known as Achaia. So when he says, Achaia was ready a year ago, he's saying, brethren, I was telling everybody the Corinthians were ready a year ago. And your zeal has stirred up the majority. Yet, I have sent the brethren, lest our boast of you should be in vain in this respect, that, as I said, you may be ready. Lest if some Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to mention you, should be ashamed of this confident boasting. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation. And I believe what Paul said about the church at Corinth here may also be said of the Savage Street Church of Christ. And let it also be said about each of us individually. I want the heart of the Corinthians, which is the heart of Christ. May we each so think. Let's go back through this passage. Again in verse 1, Paul showed how the Corinthians, I believe, were ministering to both saint and sinner. Again, verse 1 said, now concerning the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. The Corinthians knew about helping the saints in Jerusalem. The Corinthians wanted to minister to their brethren in a far-off land, because the Corinthians did good works both at home and far away. Romans chapter 15 shows that the Corinthians wanted to minister to the saints in Jerusalem because the saints in Jerusalem had ministered to them. Likewise, we have the gospel here in Grants Pass, because someone in another place years ago brought it here, or brought it to the place where you were converted. And so we all have ended up being converted to Christ. Therefore, like the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 9 and Romans 15, we should seek to minister to our brethren in other places, which we have done, and should not stop. Listen to what Paul said about the Corinthians in Romans chapter 15, starting at verse 25. He said, but now I am going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints. For it pleased those from Macedonia, that's the area north of Corinth, and Achaia. As I already mentioned, Corinth was located in Achaia. So he's telling the Romans, it pleased those from Macedonia and from the church in Corinth to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem. Now watch this. It pleased them indeed. Why did it please the churches in Macedonia and Achaia? Paul said, and they are their debtors. They recognized that they were in debt to the church or the saints back in Jerusalem. For if the Gentiles have been partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister to them in spiritual things. Well, a Jerusalem church is where the gospel started. And it has gone throughout the whole world, including here. Not because the Jerusalem church sent money or other material things out into the world, but they sent preachers out into the world. They sent out a spiritual thing, a message, the message of Jesus Christ. The Corinthians realized that, and they said, Paul, excuse me, we want to give to those brethren. We hear they're doing poorly. They're being persecuted. Some of them are losing their jobs because they're Christians. They're being put in jail and other things like that. We want to help them. What can we do? Excuse me. So there was a financial way in which they could help. They helped us spiritually. Now we want to help them materially when they're in that need. We were spiritually in need. They're materialistically in need. And so they helped one another. But the Jerusalem saints did not give the world the gospel to a world full of saints, but to a world full of sinners. The saints of Jerusalem, the apostles and other preachers in particular, ministered to the saints, excuse me, the sinners of the world. The church grew in the first century because it was ready to minister to both saint and sinner. And we're seeking to do the same right here. We minister to sinners, for example, by mailing out that house-to-house publication of which, you know, we have three copies on the table back there, into over 2,000 homes just surrounding our immediate neighborhood here. Supporting ChristianCourier.com, where hundreds of thousands of people go from all over the world to learn more about the Bible. With our Vacation Bible School every year. Our annual seminars, like our Creation Evolution Seminar, which is coming up next month. We seek to minister to our fellow saints by putting preachers through preaching school, through the Leadership Training for Christ program, through the Mountain States Children's Home, through Chamala Mission Hospital in Africa, and so on. And of course, some of those works minister to both. When the day arrives that we are no longer ready, and notice I didn't say able, that we are no longer ready to minister to both saint and sinner, the day will have arrived that we should no longer exist. This is what Jesus told the church in Revelation chapter 3. In fact, twice in Revelation chapter 3. He let two churches know that if they were no longer willing to minister anymore, then they would cease to be. Listen to Revelation 3, starting in verse 1. And to the angel of the church in Sardis write, these things says he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. Jesus referring to himself. I know your works, that you have a name that you are alive, but you are dead. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die. For I have not found your works perfect before God. Remember how you have received and heard. Hold fast and repent. Therefore, if you will not watch, I will come upon you as a thief, and you will not know what hour I will come upon you. And then several verses later, to the church at Laodicea, he said these sad and graphic words to that church that was no longer willing to minister. Verses 15 and 16. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Oh, can you imagine Jesus saying that? We have this picture of Jesus as full of love and compassion, and He is. I don't want to take away from that. But half-hearted churches or half-hearted Christians make him want to just vomit us out. What a picture, or spew us out of his mouth, some of your translations might say. We cannot do everything, but we should do as much as the Lord places before us. Now, let's come back to 2 Corinthians 9 and look at verse 2, where he speaks about being ready to minister. He says, "For I know your willingness, about which I boast of you to the Macedonians, that Acacia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has stirred up the majority." "When the Corinthians heard of the plight of our early brethren in Jerusalem, the Corinthians wanted to do something about it. They had been waiting a year to do something. But you know something? Things can happen in a year. A Christian or a whole church can grow cold. Or we can become self-centered. Or we can become materialistic. Or we can just flat out forgot what we promised or said we wanted to do. Therefore, Paul wrote to remind them of their previous commitment and to let them know that their zeal had affected other churches. They were a great example. Paul even went to other places and boasted of the generosity of the Corinthian church." And so he didn't want them to change and become a dead church. He wanted them to continue to have a heart that was ready to minister and ready to give. I think the heart of giving was seen in some of our brethren in Zimbabwe in 1991. I read in one of our Brotherhood publications back in January 1991 in the Firm Foundation, a brother by the name of Elton Holden in California wrote this: "I am very active in the work of the International Bible Correspondence School, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. One group of people who are studying with me are members of the Lord's Church in Buniswa, Zimbabwe. These brothers and sisters are so poor that they cannot buy a Bible. California," excuse me, remember this is 1991, "California is now completing its fourth year of below normal rainfall. Somewhere those brothers and sisters in Zimbabwe heard, perhaps on Voice of America, about our plight. And they took up a collection to aid us in our distress. Not knowing how to get the relief money to us, they asked one brother to write me asking how and where to send it." People in Africa, in Zimbabwe, wanted to give to their brethren, not only to the richest nation on earth, but to the richest state, probably, in that nation. They wanted to give. Both the Corinthians and the Zimbabweans had the spirit of the churches of Macedonia. Okay, we're in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Will you go to the chapter just before? It's all the same context, same letter. Paul's writing the same subject. And you go to the first five verses where Paul brought up this subject, and listen to what he says here. "Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia." In other words, your neighbors just to the north. "That in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded to the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us," they were begging us, "with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints." In other words, it sounds like Paul was saying, "Brethren, I can't be taken from you. You're as bad off as your brethren in Jerusalem." But the churches of Macedonia said, "No, we want to help, Paul. Please let us help. We've got together this money, and we want to help our brethren." And perhaps Paul continued to resist. I don't know. But they just had much urgency trying to persuade him, This is how we want to help. And then verse 5, he said, and not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. What is the spirit of the Savage Street Church of Christ and its various members? What is my spirit? Now let's look at verses 3 and 4. 2 Corinthians 9 again. Prepared to minister. Yet I have sent the brethren, Paul said, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this respect, that, as I said, you may be ready. Lest, if some Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to mention you, should be ashamed of this confident boasting. Paul did not want his boasting of the Corinthian church to be empty. Therefore, he sent some brethren ahead of him before he arrived to collect what the Corinthians had been giving every first day of the week for the past year. They were building up their savings for a specified a good work. And so he imagined, what if I go there and I've got these Macedonians with me and I've been bragging to them about you Corinthians, and so I bring these Macedonians with me and you're not ready with your gift. Well, if he went there and the church had not been saving their money from the past year, he says he would be ashamed of his confident boasting. Therefore, the weekly contribution that we give is a way to help the church to prepare to minister. The money's already collected, the works are selected, and we fund them. And so God is praised, is what he's maintaining here. And then in verse 5, he ended this little part here by saying this. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation. Paul was not going to take something from the brethren that they had not previously promised to do. This was something that they wanted to do. However, they might have forgotten their promise like we all forget things. And if they had, he didn't want to suddenly appear before them and say, brethren, remember when I was here a year ago, you made all these promises. And all of a sudden, oh yeah, that's right. We did tell Paul that, didn't we? Okay, well, we better give. And he didn't want that attitude. He didn't want grudging obligation. He wanted them to do it because they wanted to, because they were generous. In fact, just two verses later, he wrote down these famous words concerning our contribution, which most Christians know. And if you're new, I'd encourage you to get to know these words. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. So, let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. If you do not want to give, God doesn't want your gift. If you want to give, God will do things with your gift that you never dreamed possible. Now, if you're thinking, well, preacher, you really don't have any idea what you're talking about. Well, fine. The only thing I could say is give yourself body, soul, strength, energy, and time to the Lord before giving money. Don't give any money. Give yourself and see what happens. See what He does with you, and then see what you end up doing for Him. Do you know how to begin? How do I give myself? Giving myself to the Lord entails a total life change. And I can't do it half-heartedly. It's 100% change. There are reasons why I live the way I live today. There's things that I do, I have a purpose, things I'm striving for and goals, and now all that has to change. Or at least some of those things should be put in the background. Some maybe have to throw them away completely. But now I'm thinking to myself, what does the Lord want me to do? He's the Lord, I'm the servant. Speak, Lord, your servant is listening. What do you want me to do? Well, He wants us to, in a sense, die to ourselves. Just like Jesus. You know, Jesus, before He was crucified, before He was arrested and went on trial, He had this prayer to God in which He said, Father, this is what I want. I want this cup to pass. I don't want to go through this crucifixion. But it's not my will that must be done. I want your will to be done. And often God will grant our requests. Sometimes He doesn't. And in that case, with His Son Jesus Christ, He didn't grant His request. And Jesus accepted that. Jesus allowed Himself to be arrested, and then He allowed Himself to go on trials. He allowed Himself to suffer. And He allowed Himself to be killed. And that's what He wants from us. That I'm willing to go that far. Am I willing to so give up my life? For those of you who are, and you've never gone any further than that, the next thing that you need to do, according to the Scriptures, is to submit to water baptism. Because when you do that, it's a symbolic action that you're dead and you're being buried with Christ. It's like how He was buried. You're going under the water, and then you're being resurrected with Him to have a new life. You're coming up out of the water. If you're ready to take that huge step, we're ready to minister to you and to help you along the way. If you want to do it this morning, please come forward right now as we stand and sing.